Welcome to AmiSites, a podcast that offers you access to thought leaders who can help you expand your entrepreneurial toolbox. Learn from seasoned entrepreneurs who have already walked in your shoes and can help you with your day-to-day business decisions. Join the founder and CEO of Multifunding, Ami Kassar, and his co-host, Lynn Ozer, the president of Multifunding, aka the SBA Queen, as they help you navigate, grow, and stay in control of your business.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the next edition of AmiSites. I'm Ami Kassar, your host, along with my co-host, Lynn Ozer, aka SBA Queen. So excited to have my good friend here all the way from Israel, Hagai Klorman, who's going to tell us all about lots of stuff, including a super cool, super powerful business card that I proudly carry in my wallet called the cards.biz. And we're going to talk all about it, as well as whatever else we feel like talking about today. So Hagai, thank you for joining the show. I know times are tough there in Israel these days. How are you holding up?
So I think every time I talk to somebody who's someone involved, it's like a therapy session, right? It's a therapy session. We keep going again and again. But I tell you what, there's this mantra that's going through my head is that if my grandparents could deal with it and had to deal with it, then I can too. That's basically my mantra nowadays.
How about that?
This is true for my father's side, people who came, who made it from, you know, Europe to Latin America and to the United States. And it's true for my mother's side, people who are, I'm a third generation from my mother's side in Israel, that came from Yemen and basically built things from scratch and had to fight for every inch and to build every stone by themselves, basically. So if they can do it, we can do it too. So that, I know, it keeps me optimistic, but it keeps me a high energy.
It's great to see you. Ami, where should we start? From the very beginning, let's hear about your background. You've been in Israel your whole life. So tell us, when did you get the entrepreneurial bug when you were a kid?
I'll just correct one thing. I split my life between the U.S. and in Israel. I have an American accent when I speak Hebrew and an Israeli accent when I speak English. That's what came out. So it was somewhere between, I think, fourth and fifth grade. We were living in Miami at the time. And my parents shipped me out to summer camp. And this is where my first entrepreneurial endeavor started, because I found a market inefficiency, because at the time you could get sodas only during lunch break at the cafeterias. And I remember to this day, it was $1.15 to get a Coca-Cola, like a Coca-Cola or whatever, a soda. So I basically went to my parents. I borrowed $5. I think you could, the average six pack was like a nickel, I don't remember, like 25 cents, whatever, to get it. And I basically, in my backpack, went around the camp and basically hustling sodas for $1.15. And I learned a lot of things. I learned about profit margins. I learned about issuing bad debt, because some people didn't give their money, didn't pay up, and I gave credit to those who were not deserving. And I learned a lot about the government, because they shut me down. Because at some point, after, I don't remember, 2 weeks of operation, the government, the guy who organized the camp, came and said that the cafeteria was complaining that I was taking away business. And they said, you can't do it anymore. But I made a lot of money for, you know, somebody between fifth and sixth grade. That was pretty impressive. So that's how we all started. And then it went all downhill from there. I'm a third generation entrepreneur. My father was an entrepreneur. My grandfather was an entrepreneur. And I guess I had no choice in the matter.
Did you go to schooling after high school, or did you start your career right after high school? What did you do?
So in Israel, once you're age 18, you go to the army. But that, I wasn't in the fighting unit, so I got a lot of experience. When I was 19 years old, I was an officer, and I had 50-something people reporting to me. So that was my first managerial experience. So I can easily say that I was never afraid or concerned about managing other people since that experience. And also, I dealt with cybersecurity at the time. And when I got out of the army, my knowledge base for that time was in the top 5th percentile of cybersecurity. So I quickly, when I got out of the army, I went to study law and economics, but I also worked full time at the same time. And after a year out, I was the chief IT architect for IBM Israel in cybersecurity and then business development in the subject matter. So, you know, that was my first normal job, but it was under not normal circumstances.
Wow. So you have that nice normal job, well, guy, and like probably getting a nice salary and all this. And then what happened to you?
What happened to me is that I went, and again, it was a full-time job and I was doing 2 degrees. I did a law degree and an economics degree. So it was not quite, it was a regular job. Everybody, all my colleagues were 50-year-olds and 40-year-olds at the time when I was 22, but it was extraordinary circumstances. And I heard you got to do your graduate studies and an MBA. So I went and applied for a bunch of schools in the U.S., I got accepted for Boston College, so I went and got a proper Jesuit education in Boston College. I did my master's in finance and my MBA there. It was a great experience, but also I came in a different mindset. So two things that were a little different. First of all, I basically finished the two master degrees in 1 year because I was on quote-unquote only studying and not doing 2 degrees and working full-time. So it seemed like a breeze at the time. And what happened is, and this is very different from my prior experience, but they encourage you in graduate school to do informational interviews with alumni. And I found myself interviewing at the guy who was in charge of the VP of the global markets for State Street Bank, which at the time, I think, managed $1 trillion in funds. I think today they manage a lot more. And, you know, you do the interview. And in the end, I was basically asking him, hey, what are you, you know, is there anything I can do for you? What are you worried about? And he said, I have this subsidiary outside of the country, but I'm trying to sell. And I said, sure, I heard you. And about 2 weeks later, I gave him a call with a buyer. I found him somebody who wanted to buy that subsidiary. And I think 2 weeks after that, it was a deal. And I said, hey, I don't need to find a job. I can do this. Of course, it never was as easy. Never have I had a project or a deal that closed in a few weeks, ever. And I found myself the next few years dealing in entrepreneurial finance, basically like an investment bank without an investment bank. And I found a bunch of partners and we worked together on different deals. And that was the next few years. And from finance, oil and gas, technology transfer, even, and then I came back to Israel. So that kind of got me rolling.
Wow, that's
you
great.
You went back and forth quite a bit between Israel and the U.S. What do you consider home?
Israel is the home. Israel is the home because for the most part, this is where I grew up. This is where I feel the most comfortable. I'm very grateful to the United States, and I'm also a U.S. citizen, and I pay my taxes there to this day. It was a home for my grandparents who ran away from Austria and from Belarus, and it was where my father grew up. So I feel I have deep roots in the United States, but for the most part, I have lived in Israel, and I'm an annoying Israeli more than anything else.
Guy, what do you spend your time on these days?
So I'll give a little more of a backstory. So when I came back to Israel, and again, this is like an entrepreneurial journey that a bit never ends. After a while, me and my wife founded a company specialized in influencer marketing and social word of mouth. We had L'Oreal, Estee Lauder, those kind of brands as clients on one hand, where we basically helped them build organic word of mouth campaigns on social media on scale. And we also worked with private equity company firms like Bain Capital, Permira, General Atlantic, where we provided social media BI. We would look at millions also of data points, and we will be able to build basically a kind of mock-up of brand equity using publicly available intelligence. So those are the kind of the two things that we dealt with, and this was done over a decade of work. After a while, we decided to move on and close that company. My wife started her own company, and I created a group of people that as brand builders. So I assist. We invest a bit in brands at times. I'm on advisory boards of a bunch of brands. But what came out of it most of the time is Carlsbez. Carlsbez, which is a smart business card. It's made out of metal, engraved with gold or silver with semi-precious metals. And the idea behind that we don't need business cards as much as we used to. But when we do need, we want to make an amazing impression. So we invested a lot in the materials, in the quality of a product, in the engineering of a product. So when you put it up, you're guaranteed to make an impression, and it's guaranteed to work 99.999 over time, right? And Ami, I'm happy to say Ami is a client, and he's talking to me. He's happy with it. But there's also a story behind this, how we started. There's an origin story. And the way Carlsbez started is I'm an advisory board of a startup that does has a very remarkable technology around a factory in a capsule. So if you think an espresso for coffee, think a whole factory in that capsule that can make anything between skincare to pharmaceuticals, all in a capsule. And in one of the meetings, one of the people there kind of pulls out a very early version of what we see here, the card. And I said it. I take him aside and say, hey, there's a business here. There's something here. Let's do it. And a few months later, we basically launched Carlsbez last year. And since then, we've been building the brand, stabilizing the technology, and selling it to entrepreneurs, lawyers, and people that is very, and CEO levels, people that it's very, very important to them to make a good impression when they meet people.
Excuse me 1 minute. Did you say someone else had a card similar, or did you start?
No, he made it for himself. So he was an engineer. My father was an engineer, and he basically did the mock-up. But to your point, there's a bunch of QR solutions out there. There is even a bunch of NFC solutions, meaning short distance communications that like Apple Pay and Google Pay, which is the technology around. There's tons of solutions like that. But we felt, and to this day, we think it's still true, but there's no like high-end solution. So as some of our clients have said, they called it the black Amex of business cards, meaning there's a bunch of credit cards out there, but this is the Black Amex version of a smart business card. It's very high quality, very high material. The technology there it's over-engineered to be stable and to work. And we figure on the occasions you're in a meeting, the occasion you're in an event, and you want to make an impression, we'll make it a remarkable impression.
Let's back up a minute and just explain to our listeners what this thing is, because we call Lynn our CTO, and she's she rejected a job to be Elon Musk's CTO instead to come work at Multifunding because of her strong technology skills. So let's show our viewers what this thing is, okay? I don't carry business cards anymore, okay? I carry this. It's pretty tough. Here's the front. Here's the back. Is branded with my company. When I meet people, they can either tap this thing on the phone to get my stuff, or if they want to, they can take a picture of the QR code. Lynn, have you ever taken a picture of the QR
code? Yes, I have, Ami.
Wow,
thank you.
Look at that.
No, okay. How do you go to a restaurant without knowing how to do that? Well, at least during COVID, that's how I learned.
So I click on the QR code. And what happens automatically, and all my social information pops up immediately on my LinkedIn, my different social apps, my email contact information, and the user can easily save that on their phone. So what Hyundai's technology has done is he's basically and effectively made it super cool and fascinating, and it's awesome dinner table conversation.
I bet everybody must be fascinated by it.
Around a table with a bunch of people, I throw out my business card and I get my buddy Chagai some business.
Thank you, Ami. Yes, we appreciate it. And first of all, based on this pitch, I think, Ami, we can consider you to be our national ambassador on the
it's a brand ambassador.
The 2024, the brand ambassador.
Chagai,
and I would, yes.
What was the biggest challenge taking this basic idea for which you mentioned there's tons of competition? What was the biggest challenge at differentiating yourself?
Oh, so actually the first challenge, and again, we launched this last year. So practically speaking, the first is just to make, I would say, not only a good product, but a very, very good product. And again, I say the competition is a piece of paper, right? So it needs to work. It needs to work. So what Ami has and what we see here in the background, that's like iteration, the fifth iteration of a firmware, of a hardware, right? So we kept going back and forth. The first product was good, but now I think the product is great. So the first challenge was just to make something simple just work, okay? And we kind of, we iterated, we had like a simple product.
Excuse me one second.
Yes.
Tell us how many people are on your team?
So I have a small holding company that does that develops this and also does also helps some other brands.
Okay.
So it's currently the team we are at, I would say 6-7 core people plus the few people like on satellite people that help from once in a while.
Okay.
And that's through the gambit, right? Like operations, marketing, technology, development, development, and whatnot. And the second challenge. So to date, all our business has been word of mouth. Okay, all our business has been word of mouth, meaning it's like people like Ami like the product. They felt they felt comfortable enough to praise it in public. They actually use it, right? Ami, you actually use it. People see it. They check. They ask you where you got it. They go and order. And because it is a remarkable product. It looks better than what's out there. And honest, for us, I don't think it's that easy to express necessarily in a picture. It's much easier when people see it or when people recommend it and put their name behind it and say, hey, this is good, right? This is good. So what we'll focus right now is basically amplifying that message with our users and making our users that are happy with us and basically encouraging them in a very organic way to be our ambassadors. Because if they like the product, we would be very happy if they mention it to people they know. And when they use a product, we say, hey, you can get it in cards, this, and they'll feel very confident because, you know, it's one thing when you recommend somebody something, but it's even better when you recommend and you actually believe in what you recommend. I used to do that on scale for brands, you know, hundreds and thousands and millions of interactions. We're not there. We're in the hundreds and thousands, but we want to get there.
It's great.
What has it been like managing your company over the last 6 months?
So let's not, October 7 was very, very difficult. It was a very difficult period. I do not think I was productive and I don't think the company to some extent was productive between October 7th and January. But again, this is not a unique story to me. I think it's anybody who even has, even not just the people in Israel, just people who care and people who have family and friends in the situation, then I'm sure they're affected. You know, it's like, I'm not complaining when I say this. There's people, both on the Israeli side and the Palestinian side, that are much, much, much more affected and were affected than I was. But it was a very non-productive period of time. On the other hand, as much as I can say, put this aside, which is very difficult, as an addict, aka entrepreneur, I enjoy the challenge. I like abusing myself with the creative challenge of finding ways to market, create, communicate, figure out the product, the market, the audience, and all that. So from that way, it's a very fulfilling role. There's something fundamentally very gratifying to go from idea to something that people actually use to something that people actually feel comfortable and compelled even to recommend. And that feels awesome, right? Because we're in EO, and I always say, my interpretation, it's like entrepreneurs are a bit like artists. And if they could not be artists, they probably should not be artists, right? Like, but if you can't stop yourself and you need a way to express that creative element, that fire in your heart, then this is a great way to do it. And hopefully get paid in the end of the day too, at the same time.
I've always said that. I mean, I've worked with entrepreneurs my entire career, and I've always described them as business artists. There's a sense of creativity in an entrepreneur and the internal workings of your brain that does the same thing. One's a little more left, one's a little more right brain, but it's that same, it's creativity, just in a different way.
She has to put up with me, Chagai. It's not easy.
I don't know.
It's a joy to put up with you, Ami. Don't be silly.
I think what, you know, Ami, I'm sure you're worth it, right? That's the point. You're worth it. That's the thing. But I agree. It is. It's like, I think being an entrepreneur and the artist have a few things in common, right? It's like, one, you bring something to the world that wasn't there before, okay? Now, you can do it more detachedly, you can do it from numbers, you can do it from all emotions, but you do bring something to the world before. And have you guys ever read Stephen Pressfield? Stephen Pressfield has he's a writer. He has a bunch of nonfiction books. It's The War of Art and Going Pro. And those are marvelous books on the entrepreneurial creation process. So he primarily writes it as a writer, somebody who's had to sit down. But what I love about his writing, he has two concepts that resonate with me. One is resistance. And he says there is such a thing as resistance in the spiritual sense, in the cosmic sense, in the psychological sense. It doesn't matter. And as a creator, as an entrepreneur that wants to bring something to the world, you have to fight it every day, right? And that might be a writer block for a writer, and it might be a financial crisis for the entrepreneur, but it's there and it's real. And the greater the resistance, the greater the enterprise. And you should know it and accept it and not bitch about it, right? It's there. And if it wasn't there, it's not meaningful. So that's one thing. And the second great framework that he talks about that I find extremely useful is to go pro, right? The amateur laments. The amateur walks when he feels like it. The amateur lets his feelings dictate the level of his walk and so on. And the pro is like a craftsman in the sense, right? He wakes up when he wakes up. He does what needs to be done because it has to be done. Not because he feels like it. Not because he's waiting for inspiration. It's like inspiration strikes at 9 a.m. when you go to the office and what's not. And it's difficult. It's a difficult statement. And I'm not saying this is like, oh, it's easy, but you don't wait to inspiration. You happen to inspiration. You make inspiration for the work. And if you feel like it, great. And if you don't feel like it, great. You're still going to do it. And that's different between the amateur and the pro. And I think an entrepreneur at the best of times has to always aspire to be a pro.
What do you see a year ahead from now for the company?
So, what I say for the company right now is we first of all, we hope just to increase the individual sales and the corporate sales, meaning the CEO sees it and then he buys it to the C level, because that's kind of the behavior we're seeing. The second aspect we're seeing literally right now, we're trying to reach out to conference and event organizers. So if anybody hears this, know that is an events of a conference business, you know, reach out to us. And because if we think about the point, when people go to an event or a conference, they're going to use a business card, for sure. They're going to exchange information, for sure. And so if you're going to get married, you usually need the priest or rabbi. If you're going to have a baby, you usually owe all the diapers. It's one of those things. So we want to kind of scale up in partnership with event organizers conferences, because we think that's like a very big jump. And also, we are built based on my background on B2B sales, so we are set up to do basically enterprise engagement on scale. So that's the direction we're going to. And then in addition, on my group, we from time to time we have very interesting startups and very interesting companies come for us to basically take their entrepreneurial knowledge and help them build it up. So I see myself very busy in the next year, if I want it or not.
After listening to you for just this brief podcast, I truly believe you're a visionary and a strategist. And who does the nitty-gritty business work of your business?
I right now have a small team. I have a small team. So we all do the nitty-gritty. Okay, we all do the nitty-gritty, which is very challenging because in some ways, from an operational point of view, I've gone back to doing both, the macro work and the micro work, even though that over time we built systems and processes that kind of streamline those things. But I have a team of people that some of them have worked with me for a few years and some of them are new. So I trust them and they're great people and, they walk the talk. But I would not here, I'm one-handed not right now, and I'm still, I'm still looking at. I have to physically look at the calls occasionally for QA and things like, and even do some final packing and think about strategy and do the big things like the early days of any startup or endeavor.
What is your biggest challenge?
My biggest challenge. Biggest challenge is to do. It's the difference between being a toddler. As an entrepreneur and being an entrepreneur that has done it multiple times, you know what you need to do. Okay. You know, like I have a knowledge of what needs to be done in the next few steps, but we have a capacity of a smaller team and a smaller budget. So I don't think it's unique to me, but in this context, it's what's the 20%, but maybe 80% of a difference at any moment in time, because you can't do everything at the same time. So it's a constant challenge of like from all the things that you know that need to happen and all the crises and all the fires that you might see burning or on its way. What do you focus on? What do you focus on? What do you focus on? And I'm pretty sure that in 3 months, the details of the challenges will be different because bigger capacity, bigger, more sales, higher operations, but we're balancing between the short term and the short term and the medium term. And that's a constant mental, I would say, a mental challenge to kind of figure that out.
Okay. How do people find these super cool, awesome business cards? Where do they go?
Yeah.
They go to cards.biz on the website.
ARDZ.biz. And we'll put it up in the show notes as well. Chagai, you've been an amazing guest, a fascinating story. Thank you for sharing, and I'm proud to be your U.S. ambassador.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for joining us today on AmiSites. Since 2010, multifunding has helped businesses achieve their biggest growth goals through creative and personalized funding solutions, working with a network of the nation's top lenders. Visit us at multifunding.com, where you can meet our advisory team and learn more about how we help entrepreneurs fund their future.